Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We're chatting with Jordan Roiburn, founder and editor of the Daily Gold. Now, Jordan, we're going to recap some of the topics that you have addressed in some of your recent videos, starting with a gold analog that focuses a bit more on corrections within a bull market for gold. That's the setup, or at least the argument that we have right now for gold, is that if you look at the long-term chart, then gold consistently is putting in higher lows. And yeah, it's been in a correction here for closing in on 2 years, but this correction still is in that bigger context of a possible bull market. Jordan, take us through some of these analogs and how this bull market, if we want to call it that, is playing out.
Well, the main one is you have an average of 6 corrections in bull markets. So I took 6 corrections and I took the performance of those corrections, you know, during the correction and then obviously after the correction, because in a bull market, things will resume to the upside eventually. And, you know, gold was following the average line, the average of those 6 until the last couple of months, basically when it fell below 1900, when that signaled a false break above 1900. And so gold now looks a lot like the 2016 to 2018 correction, where in 2016 gold, we know it had this huge move, this huge rebound from 1040 up to 1375, and then it consolidated for 2 years basically while the Fed was hiking rates. So that sounds, I mean, not only in a macro sense, but in a technical sense, it's similar to what's been going on now, where gold, it had some strength. It looked like it was on the cusp of breaking out, and then it had a technical breakdown below 1900. So that looks similar to the 2016-2018 period. And we know what happened after that correction. I mean, that correction ended several months before the Fed stopped hiking rates. I mean, I don't know if that's going to happen this time, but I mean, they are pretty similar, especially with respect to Fed policy. I mean, if the Fed stops hiking rates and they, you know, cut interest rates in the next year, that's going to look really similar. So that's the best comparison right now. Now, from a bird's eye view and a historical perspective, if you look at gold from 1996 to 2004, 2005, that looks pretty similar to gold since 2012, where you have this decline and then 99 to 2001, gold had a double bottom. We didn't quite have a double bottom in 2016 to 2018, but it did. We did have this rebound, and then it took a couple of years for gold to get going. And so we're at the point where gold had this really bullish consolidation in 04, 05. And I think it only corrected 10%. It even made a new high during the consolidation. That's also a cup and handle pattern. It was irregular because the cup and handle occurred, or it originated from a downtrend. So that's not a pure cup and handle pattern, but nevertheless, we can say it was. And, you know, after 2005 or middle of 2005, gold bottom started trending up, had a huge breakout, broke a 20-year downtrend. So from a bird's eye view, I mean, that's setting up similarly because we're in a real cup and handle pattern. As I've explained, it's a really bullish one because the right side of the cup is higher than the left. That signals strength. And this time around, gold's only retraced 38%, which I think the 38% retracement's around 1675. So in the very big picture sense, you know, gold's in a really bullish consolidation. And so gold, if and when it's able to break above 2000 or 2100, there's strong potential for it to make a vertical move. So historically, those two comparisons fit pretty well with how things are going right now for gold.
Yeah, Jordan, I appreciate you breaking down those different analog time periods for us. And to give investors that maybe are so focused on the short-term movements, that bird's eye view that you mentioned, where if you back up and look at what happens after those corrective periods, in almost every case, there's a solid break to the upside in gold price that drags the rest of the precious metal sector with it. So it does look like we're setting up for a bigger move to the upside once this corrective move is finished. Another video that you put out recently, Jordan, that I particularly liked, and it's an interesting point, is how the 2-year yield often leads Fed policy and Fed action and how that ties into everything else in the market. So would you mind expanding on that idea a little bit for people? We normally focus on the 10 or 30 year, but talk to us about the 2-year yield.
Yeah, well, the 2-year yield is a proxy for the Fed funds rate. You know, obviously the 10 year is really important. And looking at the last couple of decades, I think the 10 year can lead the 2-year a little bit. I think I mentioned that in the last couple of weeks, but the reason I mentioned the 2-year by itself is in an inflationary period, I think it's possible that the 2-year could lead the 10-year lower. We have started to, we've seen this little rebound in bond yields. And so the yield curve is steepening. I've seen some people talk about like a bearish steepening of the curve, like in a non-inflationary environment, a steepening of the curve can be deemed as bullish. But you know, in an inflationary environment, you can get steepening and it can be bearish. And so, you know, given my view that we're probably in a bear market rally for the S&P, or if we look at these bear market rallies in the 7 worst bear markets historically, during these rallies, they've always come up and tested the 200-day moving average. Some have even gone above the 200-day moving average. So the S&P still has some potential upside based on that view, where there's some room where it could come up and test the 200-day moving average before potentially rolling over again in a couple months. And so with respect to bond yields in the short term, if that view is correct, we could see, and we've already seen it, but we could see a little more of a rally in bond yields. And so if the curve steepens, that could mean the 10-year is rising, you know, faster in a short-term sense than the 2-year. But, you know, ultimately, there is a chance that the 2-year goes lower potentially first. And so there's that to consider. And then also the point that the 2-year is a proxy for the Fed funds rate. So I'm thinking about what is going to get the Fed to shift its policy. You know, obviously the S&P rolling over, I mean, oil slowing down. I mean, those could be some things. It could just be a matter of time. And if and when that happens, you'd probably see the 2-year yield. I mean, the 2-year yield would probably peak and roll over first before those things start happening. So that's why it's important as a leading indicator. I mean, the idea that the Fed is going to shift policy and eventually cut rates, the 2-year yield is going to lead that because it's a proxy for the Fed funds rate. So that's why watching the 2-year yield is important. But I do think the period that we're in now for the next month or two, there is potential for we get a little bit more of a pop in yields because the stock market can rally up to the 200-day. You know, there's more chatter about the Fed's still going to be hiking. You know, maybe the economy is not, you know, it's not weak. I mean, it's strong. Look at how things are recovering. But that could kind of be a false strength, I think, from an inflationary perspective. So all those reasons are why it's important to watch the 2-year.
So, Jordan, with the 2-year currently at, let's say, 2.77, how high could it go in your eyes? Even if it is a false move higher, how high could that go? Over 3%, even 3.5%?
That's a really good question. I'd be really surprised if it could get up to 3.5%. But possibly, I mean, looking at the 10-year, I think the 10-year, you know, I haven't looked at that chart recently, but I know there's significant resistance. What is it, 3.25? It's like a multi-decade or like a 10-year level. So yeah, that comes in just in the low 3%. And so if the 10-year were to, you know, break above that lateral resistance, then maybe the 2-year could rally up to 3%. That's possible.
Well, Jordan, it's definitely something we'll keep our eye on, and I think it's an interesting point to use the 2-year yield on the Treasury as a leading indicator for what will drive the Fed funds rate and Fed policy, much more so than what they say. It's really going to be how the bond markets shape the view that the Fed takes on their rate hiking cycle. But one other area that you touched on recently in a video you did, which I thought was an interesting point, is you looked at how oil prices, and in specific, how oil price peaks actually affect and often match up with lows in the gold miners and kind of have an inverse relationship there, obviously driving costs. So I'd love you to unpack that point a little bit more about how the oil prices, and in particular, oil price peaks, really affect the gold mining stocks.
Yeah, I mean, it's more so oil price in the gold stocks, but there's been three times in the last 22 years where, and two of the three are really significant, where you've seen a peak in oil coincide with an important low in the gold stocks. And I think the last time that happened was 2018. So since 2016, I mean, I've talked about this before. It's been interesting how the lows since 2016, the lows in precious metals have been when inflation has peaked and rolled over. And precious metals in that period have not performed well when commodity prices and inflation was making higher highs. And so it looks to me like we could be setting up for something similar because, you know, the macro, I'm kind of doing the backwards of the answer first, but the macro is if we get oil and commodity prices rolling over, that's going to be a strong indicator that the sentiment as far as inflation versus growth, I mean, in that scenario, the sentiment is going to be shifting to worrying about recession and growth more so than inflation. And, you know, that would coincide with some kind of a shift in Fed policy. So that's the macro behind why a decline in oil can be bullish for not only gold stocks, but precious metals. I mean, with respect to gold stocks, we know that for open pit, those big mines that require lots of trucks driving around and hauling ore, you know, energy can be like one third of the price. So energy is really significant, the energy cost for these companies. And, you know, the front side of the answer is the longer that oil is, it keeps rising or holds around these levels, that's going to keep inflation expectations high. And it's going to keep the Fed of the mind that, hey, we have to continue to hike rates and tighten policy because gas prices are way too high. Oil is way too high. So that's why oil, you know, breaking out here and perhaps rising to 145 or 150, that's why, you know, that could put pressure on precious metals in the short term, even though precious metals are still really oversold. So that's how I look at it. But I do think that technically, if oil makes a really strong vertical move to 145 or 150, I don't think that is going to be the start of this huge breakout in oil. And at the same time, you know, that move could coincide with what I talked about earlier, which is bond yields moving higher for a couple months. So I think, you know, we do have this setup for potentially summer where if oil keeps rising, you know, it has room to rise to 145 or 150. You know, that's going to keep inflation expectations firm in the short term. But I think, you know, looking out 3, 6, 9 months, I think it would kind of be a false move because that would, you know, pull everybody over to the inflation side. But at the same time, you know, inflation causes demand destruction and is really negative for the economy. So this rising inflation for the next couple months, you know, that could put even more recessionary pressure on the economy. And when there's a shift and the market senses that, okay, we're going into a recession, then capital is going to move away from oil, commodities, and, you know, back into bonds and yields would come down. And at the same time, if that view is right, you know, the stock market would be weak and finish its bear market rally. And so I think that's the kind of scenario that would lead a bottom and a real rebound in precious metals. And of course, the Fed shifting its policy.
This all sounds like quite the process, though, when you consider with oil how long it's gone almost vertical for right after that COVID washout. Boy, oh boy, the oil price has been strong, showed a bit of weakness at the tail end of last year, but again, has just taken off this year. Jordan, it sounds like it's not going to be smooth sailing for at least this summer, if not the rest of this year. Do you have general outlook in terms of just how tough these markets could be in a time-wise sense?
Well, I think the rest of the year, I think that's a little too much. I think we could get a shift before that point. But, you know, looking at the S&P 500 in the 6 or 7 worst bear markets, they're following this template. And so we're in the bear market rally phase. The S&P is in the low 4,100s. I think the 200 days around 4,500. So it has some more room to rally. I mean, if you look at sentiment indicators, they're really, really oversold. And by the way, you know, precious metals in the last 6 weeks, they look a lot like the stock market. So everything's kind of been moving together. So I still think there's room for more of a bear market rally. But historically, you know, getting back to these 6 or 7 worst bear markets, the market really started to fall apart in the, I think it was the 8th or the 9th month into the bear market. So we're looking at, you know, August or September as possibly a point where things could shift. And I say that because if we have the S&P rolling over in August or September, and it looks like it's at the previous low, or it's like on the cusp of making a lower low. I mean, in that type of environment, you're not going to have the Fed raising rates for much longer. I mean, when that happens, they're going to be thinking about, we need to ease policy and cut rates. And so, I mean, there are a few of those bear markets. It took a few months more than that. I think the 1937 one, it fell apart. After the bear market rally, I want to say it fell apart like in the 6th or the 7th month, but the median and the average is pretty strongly in the 8th or 9th month. So I think the September, I mean, that's really going to be the key for the Fed. They should be able to, you know, get these 50 point hikes off and get up to 2%. But that to me is the real important period, will be the last half of the summer, then into the September meeting, because there's a lot of time in there where things can really shift as far as the markets and expectations. But, you know, who knows? Maybe there's enough juice in the economy and the inflation figures to stay high where they're able to get a hike in a 50 point in September. But I think once we're out of summer, I think that's the real interesting scenario, which is how I don't think people realize how quickly the Fed can shift policy. And it's something I'm probably going to talk about in a video or an article. But historically, I mean, in the last cycle, it was 5 or 6 months between the last hike and the first cut, which was pretty quick. But there's other instances, I think, historically, where they shifted really fast, like faster than that. It was only a couple months. And so with how things are setting up, I think that's the real interesting macro development that we could see in the second half of the year, which is the potential for the Fed to just do a 180 really quickly, where they get a hike in and then suddenly a month or two later, it's like, okay, well, we shouldn't have done that. Now it looks like everything's rolling over. We're going into a recession. Now we need to cut rates. So the 180 that the Fed could do, that shift, I think there's strong potential for that to just happen really quickly, where 1 month we're talking about, oh, well, gee, you know, they're still hiking rates. Inflation's still a problem. You know, the blah, blah, blah. And then suddenly a month or two later, it's like, okay, we got to cut rates now. Everything's, you know, we're going into a recession. We got to stop this. So that to me is, there's real interesting potential for that kind of a shift in the second half. And so maybe that's, I don't know, maybe that's August and September that happens, or maybe it's after the September meeting and they're able to get in, you know, an extra 50 point hike.
Yeah, who knows? But it is still so Fed-focused, even central bank-focused, too, as other central banks are starting to hike rates here. Either way, as we said on the onset, next two meetings, rate hikes are baked in, and then the third meeting from there in September, big question mark. And from there on out, we'll see when the Fed needs to switch, how quickly they switch policy, or how long they stick to rate hikes. Jordan, thank you, as always, for your time, buddy. We'll chat next week on the back of the Fed meeting, which undoubtedly will give some more volatility to these markets. Jordan, thanks for your time. Have a great rest of your week.